Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me, this show, pretty much everywhere you get your content, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, at Hawk Blogger. And thank you again for folks getting us over the 30,000 subscriber mark on YouTube. Very, very cool, which means I'll be giving away a pair of tickets to some deserving Seahawks fan who is going to scream their heads off in this game on Thursday against the Rams. So make sure if you are interested, let me know. You got to make sure you're subscribed here on YouTube and ideally also on Instagram and TikTok. Part of the reason you do that is because every Tuesday you get to hear from the best player I ever rooted for during my time as a Seahawks fan back in the day, Matt Hasselbeck. Former quarterback of your Seahawks, currently surrounded by footballs in his home. How are you doing, Matt?
Yeah, football. These were all in boxes till COVID came. And then, we finally went through the boxes of some of our moving trucks. And I said, all right, we'll put them up before, you know, my dad had game balls when I was growing up. And we just would play with them, like in the driveway, you know. I'm like, Dad, you know, don't you want to save these? He's like, for what? You know, like for what? We didn't have like a big house. There was nowhere to display the stuff. We moved a lot. So, yeah, mine are up here for now. And then someday, hopefully, I'll have grandkids that can be, you know, scuffing these up in the driveway someday.
Love it. Love it. How often do you throw the football nowadays?
A lot. Well, because I was coaching high school football. So, You know, all the time, really, because of that. But no, if I wasn't doing that, you know, I don't know if I'd, you know, I did used to do Monday Night Countdown and like pregame, Steve Young would always want to throw passes and do the crossbar game and kind of show off his arm a little bit because he still had it. He actually would love to run a route. Like we would always end the right before the show or at the end of the show, he'd run a post route in the red zone and I'd throw it to him. He's in a suit. He'd always wear sneakers for that reason. And, you know, I'm in dress shoes but coaching high school football, and that's a little bit why like the Philip Rivers thing, like kind of made sense to me, man. You threw a lot of balls like all day, like you're catching a lot of balls. You're throwing a lot of balls. And in fact, I would say I've never caught so many footballs in my life. You know, when you're the NFL quarterback and you play catch, there's always someone to catch the ball for you. Like you're not even allowed to catch the ball. And so like now, you know, I'm sitting there, these dudes are humming it. I'm like, I take my wedding ring off. I got to get some receiver gloves. But no, it was, so I think that was kind of one of the things that I was not surprised by, you know, watching Philip Rivers do his thing.
So I've always seen that with the quarterbacks that someone's doing the catching. I assume that's like to avoid, you know, injury, like, you know, jamming a finger or something like that. Is that?
Yeah. You know, jamming a finger is a big one. The other thing you can kind of like pop a little blood. I don't know. I say vessel, it's not a vessel, but you know, in your finger.
Yeah.
But there's an art to it. Right. You know, the guy always should stand on the quarterback's right side if he's a right-handed thrower. You never want to have to, like, reach across and then come over. Like, there's actually some detail to it. And then I would even say, like, when you're throwing to somebody, you're never really just throwing. Like, we always say, you know, you're not throwing like you're at the beach. Like, you're literally aiming for something. I'm aiming for your left eye. I'm aiming for your right ear. I'm aiming for your, you know, your shoulder blade. I'm aiming for whatever I'm aiming for each and every time. You know, so that's, I think, a little bit why, like on purpose, the passes aren't always like right back at you in the middle. So that's another reason not to have the quarterback be the guy.
I could totally be wrong on this, and I probably am. But for some reason, in my mind's eye, they only have someone catching the ball for the starter. Is the backup catching the ball?
If there's enough people, and usually, yeah. You know, usually it's an equipment manager, but a lot of times the receivers are running back, a tight end, you know, anybody, it helps them get loose. Like they get into the flow of the game. They get into a rhythm. You know, a lot of guys love to catch passes. I mean, even when I was the backup for Brett Favre, you know, like I'd have a lot of guys like before, you know, the game would start or in between a series, defense on the field, like, hey, I need to catch some passes, And I would sort of appreciate it because it was kind of an excuse for me to get loose without being like, hey, something might happen to you today. You know, or if you're in like a quarterback controversy kind of a situation, like in the backup starts getting loose, like, you know, CBS is throwing the camera right on the guy right away. Like, oh, the backups get loose. So if it was ever sort of like the ask of maybe the starting running back or one of the receivers or a tight end just wants to like, hey, sometimes they want to loosen up their tape job on their wrist. Maybe it's their gloves. They want to break them in. They're brand new, you know, whatever it is. It's all part of it.
You mentioned, you know, the part of the reason I was asking about throwing is I'm curious, how much of a difference have you noticed in your arm strength? And just like, when did you start noticing a difference in your arm strength and how did it show up?
Listen, I threw a tight end university last year, like with a bunch of guys. Like, I was nervous about that because I hadn't really thrown like competitive throwing.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's the thing. I don't think it's about throwing. In fact, I would tell you right now, Jim Zorn can sling it with just about any quarterback in the NFL today. It's not about the throwing. It's about moving. It's about starting and stopping and quick twitch, like fast twitch muscle fiber and getting hit, you know, like staying healthy, like those kinds of things. The speed of the game for your body in the pocket, you know, those subtle little like movements. I mean, even Tom Brady, I think like people think of him as super slow, but he was very, very good at eyes downfield, moving 1 yard, 1 yard, 1 yard. And that's all you do. So no, that's what I think it's about. And literally, if you think I'm just kind of saying that about Jim Zorn being able to still like chuck it, the dude can absolutely spin it still. Now, can barely walk. He's got so much metal in his ankle, but he can still chuck it. So no surprise. I think there's a lot of quarterbacks now who saw what Phillip Rivers did and they were like, oh, man, I could still throw it. But they all know what they couldn't do. And that's play 11 on 11 tackle football.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that because I was kind of giving Phillip Rivers the benefit of the doubt. There was the arm strength did seem different than when he first, you know, when he used to play, like some of those balls were taking a while to get to.
Well, listen, that to me makes sense too, because like when you're playing catch, you're just standing there. It may not seem like a big deal, but when you take a drop back and then all of a sudden you're like moving it, like there's no way the rest of his body is in the kind of shape it would be in had he gone through OTAs and minicamp and training camp in the season. There's no way that he is feeling comfortable, confident, and fit the way that he would. And so that's where the miles per hour come off. But it's not because of the arm. It's because of the lack of like maybe like glute strength, core strength, quick twitch, you know, the pop in your, like, it hasn't been doing, I don't know, an hour of jump rope every week, you know, over a course of seven days or a month or whatever he used to do. Like, that's where the difference is going to show up, like on the field. But it's not because his arm is old. And in fact, I don't even know what muscles he uses to throw with his throwing style. It's like, fun fact, I love Phillip, but like when I used to study film and watch him play, I would like cover the screen and watch the film like this. So his throwing style would not rub off on me at all. Like, I didn't want to, I'd be like, all right, love everything about your game. Love how quick the ball comes out. But like, man, is that, I can't even.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to see more of it as he's going to continue to be the starter. And you know, what did you make of what you saw in that game? And obviously we'll talk about the Seahawks offense as well, but you know, watching him out there and just managing that game and putting them in a position to almost win it.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like he was doing it for all the old guys out there. I mean, there were a bunch of old guys that were like, yeah, look at this. Yeah, you're doing it. So he had all the young guys, you know, all the kids he coached, they were cheering him on. And then anybody midlife, like they were cheering him on, like, let's go. I think he did a lot of things. I would point to three things that I thought were the most, I don't know, the biggest three things he did. Number one, he avoided negative plays. He really did. He kept them out of negative plays. He was very, very quick to throw it away. That can demoralize the defense. It protects the team. It protects the play caller playing the field position game. This is the kind of stuff that quarterbacks that I really respect throughout my whole career respected them. This is the stuff that they do. This is what winning quarterbacks do. And you don't get credit for it. In fact, it actually hurts you on your passer rating. But they're like, you know what? I know I could maybe do something, but balls out. Second and 10. We're good. He did a great job of that. I thought he brought an energy to the team that, you know, think about where this team was. Oh man, we just lost Daniel Jones, our MVP candidate. Like, man, our chances are over. And then he comes in and it almost became like a joke. And then it was funny. And then it was like, no, you're going to be our starter. You're our leader. And he was the leader. He brought energy. Like, and so like, I think the energy level, whether it was from him or the national media, like all eyes were on that game. like everybody picked up their intensity for the Colts, I thought, offensively and defensively. I thought he brought that to the team. And so that's kind of the third thing, just the leadership that he brought, the steady hand at the podium, like, hey, I got it. And he's a very demonstrative guy. I thought at the line of scrimmage, you know, Mike McDonald brings these exotic blitzes and creative, and you see a lot of quarterbacks get surprised. Dude was not surprised. He was up there like, no, slide to him. You got him. Let's go. Ready? Set up. You know, no delay games, like was in command. They had a hat for a hat, and I would say most of the game, maybe the whole game, they had the right hat for the right hat. And, you know, and when they didn't, he protected the team by getting rid of it. So it was those three things, I think, is really what he brought. And he left the game. He left the field with the lead. You know, I mean, it was like, hey, I did it. Defense, now you go do your job. And they couldn't. You know, Seattle got it done at the end, which is huge.
Yeah. It was really interesting to watch. And you know, I got nothing against Phillip Rivers but I'm glad the Seahawks ended up winning. The Seahawks offense was a big part of the conversation in that game, Matt. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, I mean, I want your general thoughts as well. Obviously the running game was not good and hasn't been good most of the year. A lot of the attention always goes back to Sam Darnold, and his time to throw is kind of increased. And I don't know if you see what I'm seeing. It very well could just be my, you know, untrained eyes, but his feet don't look as calm and methodical when he's going through his progressions to my eye as they did earlier in the year. And I'm just wondering, like, are you seeing things that are the play that are leading to him having more hesitation? Is it him? What's your read on why his time in the pocket's kind of increasing the last part of the year?
I you know, like in any game, there's good, there's bad, you know? And so like a lot of times what they do on TV, especially national TV, they'll find three plays and they'll be like, oh, look, they stink because of these three plays. Like, I mean, dude, there's like probably 40 plays in the game. So you're going to cherry pick three and say, this is the whole issue, you know? So it's never that. However, I know for me, and I think for Sam, and I think for a lot of quarterbacks, when you get all the guys out in the progression, then you have flat control. Like you have five protectors and then everybody else is running routes. Like that's where it's really easy to be a rhythm passer. And that's where it's really easy to take one hitch, two, it balls out. And when you go with these 7-man and 8-man protections, in theory, it's more protection, but it's really not, because you got nowhere to go with the ball. Now, it works great if they're bringing six guys or seven guys or eight guys. But when they're only bringing four, you know, or less, and you have everybody in blocking, like it's a problem, you know. And so it's a problem on sacks, but it's also a problem sometimes on you holding the ball too much. And so like I think there was only one sack in the game for the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. We were in a 7-man protection. And we do a full slide of the offensive line. So, like, they have zero chance of, like, losing their matchup, full slide. Like, right tackle over. We're all going left. But now we put our running back on, like, their first-round pick, you know, superstar pass rusher from UCLA. And it was like he wasn't even there. Walked through him like he was, you know, the wind, you know. And so, like, that doesn't give me confidence as a quarterback. And like my eyes are downfield, but man, I feel it. And not only do I feel it, I know that I have my running back on your best pass rusher. Not a fan. I mean, I don't know if you can tell, not a fan. So yeah. there was one of those, but I think there's some good, because you do need to mix in your 7-man protections and your 8-man protections, especially when you're banged up front or you don't have the great matchup up front. But I don't put that on Sam. There's other things I would put on Sam, but I don't put that on him.
Yeah, so you're in there looking and talking to the team about the offense. You're obviously an offensive coordinator now. What would you kind of, whether it's individual or just general approach, scheme, anything, what would be your top priorities to kind of get the team back to where they were?
I think it's not like a wholesale change kind of thing, but, you know, I think just taking a real keen eye on short yardage, third down, like those are the areas where, you know, I'll use the sack as an example. It was a 3rd and 8. We're backed up. Just don't give them the sack, you know, like don't give them the opportunity for the sack. So those are the hidden things. But I think individually, like, you know, each position group, that's kind of like, we used to have the saying, December football, you don't have to swing the axe harder, just sharpen the blade. So like, what does that mean for each group? Well, you know, I mentioned before to you, wide receivers blocking downfield. Like, that needs to be a thing. Like, I don't think it's that big of a thing. And like every, it's like, okay. I would say we're okay there. Running backs, you got to be your own blocker sometimes. We're going to design the run to be what the run is, but there's always going to be one person we can't get. Like, usually it'll be, we're going to try to make it be a cornerback. You have to be your own blocker. You need to make a dude miss. Like, running out of bounds, like, that's not for us. Like, that, you know, like, that's not December football to me. Quarterback. We talk a lot about interceptions and, like, you know, protecting the ball, blah, blah, blah. Fumbles. Like, we got really, really fortunate. I think we were backed up again. Quarterback scramble. Great. We love it. Like, ball's out. Like, we're fortunate the ball went out of bounds. You know, there was another scramble. Like, you got to protect yourself too. Like, we need you for the long haul. Like, you know, so like, if everyone just does like 2% better here, 2% better there, we collectively get a lot better. So I don't think there's like some big magic secret. And then like coordinator wise, I do think we can't get like lost in the forest a little bit, and we can't forget, you know, little things like the matchup things. Like, it's great, we're doing a shift and a motion and this and that, and we're helping out these guys. But like in the process, we just made it really hard for ourselves. So this is stuff that I'm sure everybody knows. They just got to, just got to clean it up, sharpen the blade, and do it in a short week against a great opponent.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that opponent, Seahawks faced the Rams, and this one is, it's not quite for all the marbles, but it's for a lot of the marbles. Let's put it that way. And the Seahawks, as we know, lost this game the first time they played. It was close. You know, I don't know how much you're into numbers and all that, but there's a thing called success rate, which basically measures like how often you're successful on each down. So it's kind of like efficiency. The only time all season that the Rams have been outperformed in success rate was against the Seahawks. That's the only team. Seahawks have gained the most yards against the Rams defense. Matt Stafford had his fewest passing yards against the Seahawks defense. There's a lot of positives other than who won the game. So, you know, knowing what you know, you look at this game, what's your first, where's your mind go? Where's your first part of who's going to determine how this game ends?
Well, I think I told you last time, not last time, but when they played that game, the best thing to do is the day after kind of have a report right now. What went well? What went wrong? What do we wish we did better? What, you know, if we could do it again, and then put that notebook and put it away, and then go play a bunch of games and then bring it out literally yesterday and say, all right, what did we say back then? And what you do is you combine those notes with the notes from the Colts game. You know, what did we struggle with? What was good? Like, even though the numbers in theory, like, aren't bad, like, you know, there was some good stuff. And then there was some stuff that like wasn't great, but like it was good enough. You know, like the back shoulder throw that Philip Rivers had to Pierce, like, it was perfect coverage call, perfect coverage in the corner, didn't play it right. You know, he played like he didn't have help, but he had help. You know, like, that would give us another chance on that. We're good. Like, we got it. You know, in the offensively, you know, I know the numbers weren't great, you know, running the ball or whatever, but like, I thought Zach Charbonnet had a good game. Like, personally, every single time we rushed for a first down, short of maybe one quarterback sneak from Sam Darnold or maybe a couple scramble from him, like, Charbonnet was the back. Like, he rushed for all the first down. Like, there's some good stuff there. So you take some of the lessons from the Colts. Like, I thought in the Colts game, maybe a weakness that got exposed that probably will get exposed now again with Sean McVay and Stafford and their injury situation is covering running backs out of the backfield. We didn't do a great job of that. So you take what happened in the last Rams matchup plus what happened in this Colts matchup plus maybe some other, like, maybe kryptonites from the last 2 weeks, and that's what the game plan needs to be. And so just off the top of my head, going back to the Rams game the first time, they were the more physical team up front. Both sides of the ball. They were, not us, them. That's a big deal. They were squatting on routes. I think I told you back then, get ready for double moves. They deserve it. They want to sit at the sticks. Good. We'll make you pay. And even if we don't hit it, like, we just have to prove that we're going to do it. At least once a quarter, we got to go by you. Has to happen. And then I think another thing, just like the focus and the detail in the red zone opportunities. Like, it's great that we've got a field goal kicker that we love and we trust and he can kick field goals. That's not going to cut it against this team, this offense. Quarterback's really good, but he's him and all his touchdown stats, all those inside the five touchdown passes, are overshadowing the fact that this might be the best rushing team in football. They got a two-headed monster. Their young guy, Blake Corum, they run inside zone, they run outside zone, they run the kind of the tight end ISOs. But Blake Corum, whether he doesn't know or he just got great vision, this dude will bounce everything. Like, he just bounce. You know, that he has it inside, bounce. So you gotta take Kyren Williams, you gotta take the bounce, you gotta take the what the running back should do, what the running back does do. Two different guys, McVay. There's a lot in this game in a short week. It's gonna be a challenge, but they've known this for a long time. Like, that's why it was really important to have the notebook out from the last game, so we don't have to put a lot of effort and energy. It's like, yep, I remember talking about that.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And I'm curious for a player, you know, for fans, for the media, they make a big deal out of the rivalries and, you know, this versus that. And for players, I wonder when games and opponents become rivals and actually that there's a little bit more to it, because obviously the words are always, we take one game at a time. Every game is just another game. And everyone's friends across the league. But there's times where it's a little bit more than that. And I'm curious when it becomes more than that.
Yeah, listen, rivalry is a real thing. It doesn't mean you dislike the person always. I was at a wedding this weekend at my table. It was like Brock Heward, Trent Dilfer, obviously spouses, right? You know, like quarterback room, Seahawks, like couldn't be friendlier, better. And also at our table, we got represented, you know, the wife of a 49ers, like Ring of Honor person, Hall of Famer, D lineman, and a D lineman and his wife who were on the Steelers in Super Bowl 40. You know, like it wasn't like it ruined the night. You know, we were good. We actually great, had an amazing time. It was like super fun, you know. But does that mean that we didn't have like this epic rivalry with the Niners early on, NFC West, when they did conference realignment and division realignment? Like, no, we did. Like we did. And it was like, our whole thing was to beat them. Steelers, I can still almost barely even say it, right? But like, you know, you can still compete like you would compete in your neighborhood, in the street, in their front yard with the kids that like, man, we're going to battle till our parents call us home for dinner and there's going to be blood and maybe ER visits. We're going at it. Yet I don't like hate you. It's just, but like there is, we're going to raise the level of intensity because of what the matchup is. And we know like it's you and me. Like that's what it is. It's the Rams and the Seahawks. I said it to you, like the Super Bowl in theory is the two best teams. It's not. Like it's not this year. Like the two best teams literally might both be in this division this year. These might be the two best teams in the NFL. So like, it doesn't mean there's hate, but it definitely rises to the level of like this Thursday night game. We've had it circled for a while for a lot of reasons. And now as the season goes, it's even more important than we thought it was before.
Yeah. I part of the reason I'm asking that is because one, back when it was the Seahawks 49ers, there was, you know, Richard Sherman, Doug Baldwin, Jim Harbaugh. There was history there. And even Pete Carroll, Jim Harbaugh, there's a little bit there, although they downplay it. There was history. And that those teams, there was a lot of animosity there that went, I think, beyond normal. These two teams and these two fan bases haven't really had that. But I talked to Chen.
I don't know. Wait. I mean,
okay, like, tell me.
Even you mentioned that the Niners, I mean, Mike Holmgren, when it was Niners week, you couldn't even like stand near him. He rode the elevator by himself. Like you wouldn't even like, we'd all be waiting for the elevator. He'd get in the elevator. It was Niners week. You'd be like, yeah, we'll just wait for it to come back down. There wasn't like other elevators. We were waiting for that elevator to go up, that elevator to come back down. Then we'd get on because that's how he was with the Niners. And it was T.O. and it was Jeff Garcia. And they had some dudes, right? They had some dudes. When I think about the Rams in my like Seahawks, you know, window, man, that was the greatest show on turf. Well, we could not get over that team. And everyone would talk about the offense. Like it wasn't always Kurt Warner. Like sometimes Mark Bulger. We could not stop those dudes. Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, Ricky Pro. We couldn't stop Marshall Faulk. But defensively, that was the hurdle that we had to get over. You know, for when we eventually made it to the Super Bowl, one of the things that we did, one to Tim Ruskell's credit, we went and took two of the defensive ends from the Rams, Grant Wistrom and Bryce Harper. Right. Yeah. We brought them over And what came with them? Their notebooks, you know, their Lovie Smith notebooks of that defense. And hey, you know, that was a major rivalry for us. And I don't know, sorry, not to go.
No, this is great.
Because we were the AFC West for so long. Yeah. The NFL created this thing like, oh, now you're the NFC West. And geographically, how's this going to be a rivalry thing? We had it immediately with the Niners, immediately. Yeah. But the Rams were so good. Like, that was the mountain that we had to get across or get over. And that's a little bit what I think this Rams team is. Like, we hired Mike McDonald to be our head coach because of what? We got to figure out how to beat Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan. Like, that's why we hired who we hired. We need our own little whiz kid to help us. So, this is as big of a rivalry game as you have.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, when I talked to Cooper Kupp and I asked him, you know, I thought it was a softball question after the last time they played. I was like, was it weird at all? This wasn't right after the game. This was like the week after the game. I was like, was it weird at all to be disappointed with the Rams loss after all those years you've been on that team? And he just looked at me. He's like, no. And Ernest Jones, that statement he said about Sam Darnold was partially for Sam Darnold, was also partially because he was playing hurt and was pissed that they lost that game. And I talked to Chen Nwosu yesterday, and he's like, they can keep chirping, Puka Nacua talking about ghosts and all that. We'll see who's talking after that. Like, I think this game is a little bit more for this team than maybe a typical one.
Yeah, that's all good. I like that. I also think that, you know, you're real guarded when you go into a game like this to not, like, quote unquote, bulletin board material. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're coached on it. Your PR firm, PR department,
yeah.
Your coaches. Hey, guys, you know, we're going to do our talking with our, you know, our play. We're not going to say anything, you know, stay off social media, like, you know, all the stuff. But to me, like, going back to that, like, the week before the Seahawks played the Rams the first time, to me, the intensity that Cooper Kupp brought to his play was evident. I think it was a 3rd and 4. He caught the ball. He should have probably gone down. And it was almost like, I know my old teammates are watching this film. I know they're watching this film all day. They're watching it on 1st and 2nd down, you know, base, like, you know, explosive reel. They're watching on 3rd down reel. They're watching on red zone reel. Like, that's the intensity that you don't need to say a word. Like, I know what this means to you. So, and I do think too, crowd noise is part of it. You know, one of the reasons that it was so hard to beat the Rams and we felt the intensity of the Rams game is we'd go down into that dome stadium that they had, and the crowd was crazy loud. I mean, it was crazy. And so, like, I think sometimes, you know, at home in Seattle, we have had that same effect on opposing teams. So, like, that certainly plays a part.
So if you were, I mean, obviously we talked a lot about the Seahawks. You look at the Rams and you're saying, okay, how do you beat this team? I think they've clearly had the best season to date, all things considered. But if you're trying to beat this team, how do you do it?
I think, having Devontae Adams out is huge. Like, that's a major, major thing. Because he's not a speed demon anyway, and neither is Puka Nacua. Like, that's not their thing. They're not like a run by you kind of guy, not anymore anyway. So Stafford, you know, not having his kind of, like, I call him his binky, you know, for anyone with little kids, you know, like, you don't need it, but it gives you a lot of comfort. But I did like kind of took some notes on, like, what I think would be the thing to take away from Stafford. And, like, what would make him feel like he was eating his cereal with his opposite hand, like left hand? Not a big deal, but, like, it is a big deal and really makes you uncomfortable. I think his, like, he's got a now and later game, meaning, like, the ball comes out right now or way later. And so if we could maybe sacrifice a little bit on maybe how quickly we get to the passer and just be ready for those now of the now and later plays. That quick screen, the catch and throw, you know, the tight end screen. Like, last week, Detroit was ready for it. They didn't always do a good job, but picked him off one time on, like, a tight end screen. But just, you know, that's something that is never going to leave the Sean McVay offense, the screen game to tight ends and running backs and those right away throws to wide receivers. So if we can get our hands up and kind of take that away, I do think that that's a major, major thing. And then obviously all the normal stuff, like what this team is based on is like stopping the run. And then the nakeds come off of the run. You know, that's a little harder to do. Like that, you just better buckle up and tell your D-line, like, hey, this game starts with you. But taking away those screens, especially the right-of-ways, those can be game-changing plays.
Are you going to be a guest anywhere else that people should check out this week for more Matt Hasselbeck?
So my flight from the Miami was in Key Biscayne, Florida, basically Miami. That flight got canceled. Went to Fort Lauderdale. That flight got canceled. So I missed Colin Cowherd yesterday. So they'll have me on Wednesday or Thursday this week instead in the 10 a.m. hour, I think. And I'm also going on with the Golics father-son at some point. I think that might be tomorrow.
Love it.
Other than that, I'll be just shoveling snow here in Massachusetts.
Well, you know, it keeps that dad strength growing. So appreciate it.
I'm really just training in case Philip Rivers gets hurt. You know, I just got to like, you know, loosen it up. No.
Yeah, man. I mean, why not? Well,
there's a lot of reasons. It's called Achilles, meniscus, hamstring, calf muscle.
How'd you do on the dance floor at the wedding?
Strong effort on the dance floor. Strong. Okay. A lot of young people. A lot of baseball players, volleyball girls, lacrosse girls. It was like easy to hide. Very crowded dance floor. A lot of big guys around me. You know, just kind of like the movie Hitch. Just kind of stay right here.
Anything I can use against Brock Heward?
We were definitely photographed in like cowboy hats that light up. Me, him, and Trent. That photo exists somewhere. So
okay.
I don't know if I want it out there, but
yeah, no, I'll at least threaten Brock with it. So that's
he might be proud. He might be proud of it. Fair.
Matt Hasselbeck, Ring of Honor member, one of the best 50 players to ever play for the Seahawks. Thanks, Matt. Have a great rest of your week.
All right, see you.
All right, that was Matt Hasselbeck. Great as always, and I mean, I'd like to see Matt and Brock sporting lighted cowboy hats. That sounds entertaining. That would be fun. Folks, if you haven't given the show a like and click subscribe, now's a great time to do it. And if you're interested in going to this game and not just talking about it, got a pretty good deal here that you'll want to take advantage of. You got good stuff coming from SeatGeek. Use it if you can. I've honestly a very good chance I'll be using SeatGeek myself this week to get tickets for the Rams game to give away to somebody who'll be screaming. I've been getting a lot of inbound requests, so happy to continue doing that. If anybody's got seats they're offloading and wants to do their blogger, podcaster buddy a favor, let me know. I'll take good deals, free tickets, whatever you want to offer. I'll take anything and happy to figure out some kind of compensation, whether it's money or other. Appreciate everybody who's been doing that, and obviously let's get as many Seahawks fans in there as possible. So bunch of stuff to cover. I'll be going in today to talk to Sam Darnold and Clint Kubiak and Adam Dirty. Don't know if we'll get locker room time or not. We'll find out more information practice schedule wise about, kind of what's going on with both the Rams and the Seahawks. But it's also worth kind of knowing or sharing that the practice report, like the report from Ian Rappaport yesterday, was that Davante Adams is not expected to play this week and that he's week to week. And that they're hoping to get him back soon. As far as the practice report, which was just a estimation, they don't officially practice on Monday. Davante Adams was listed as DNP, did not participate. Braden Fisk, the defensive tackle who missed part of the game this past week against Detroit, Sunday against Detroit, he was also a DNP. And then Jalen McCullough, their safety / corner kind of dime back, he also was listed as DMP, and that was with illness. So you'd think maybe he'll be better by Thursday, but those are meaningful. Now they also listed their left tackle, Alaric Jackson, with an ankle as limited. He left the game against the Lions for a little bit, but not long. And the word was it was because there was a cleats issue. It wasn't an injury. But he is listed as having an ankle and being limited in participation. So there's some stuff going on there for the Rams. We'll see how that goes on a short week. As far as the Seahawks, I know everyone's got their eye on Charles Cross and his hamstring. He was listed as DMP for yesterday. Everybody else was available. Other than Cody White was limited with an abdomen. DeMarcus Lawrence was limited with a quad. But, you know, for all we know, this is just like, that's usually a veteran kind of situation for DeMarcus Lawrence. So he's been getting rest days each week at this time of the season. So I think generally speaking, the Seahawks, you know, are in good shape that way. And they're going to be in better shape in this game than they were heading into that game, the first time that they played. So something to keep an eye on there. But I also wanted to share with you all a little bit of, I've just been starting to do Tail of the Tape, not quite there yet, but there was some data that I pulled, and I was talking about some of this with Matt when Matt was on, but let me share this with y'all so you can see it. This is that chart I put together of success rate for the Rams. And success rate, again, depending on how you calculate it, it's usually either a positive EPA on each play is successful, whatever that is, or the classic way to define success rate is you get, I think it's 40% of the yardage you need for a first down on first down. You get 60% of the yardage you need for a first down on second down. And then you get all of the yardage you need on third down. Those are all success. And so it's kind of a stay on schedule stat. And the Rams have been almost perfect all year in this stat. They have only one game all year where their opponent has had a higher success rate than their offense. And that was against the Seahawks. The Seahawks had a success rate advantage against the Rams. And that wasn't the only situation where the Seahawks did something that has not happened much the rest of the year. This is looking, same looking graph, but different data. This is the yardage differential for the Rams. On the left side, you see all the plus yardage where the Rams outgained their opponent, the most being they outgained the Arizona Cardinals by 220 yards in week 14, all the way down to the only three teams have outgained the Rams in terms of yardage. And that is the Ravens, the Jaguars, and the Seahawks. The Seahawks outgained them by 165 yards. That is by far their largest deficit in a game this season. So that was another one that I thought was interesting. This is looking at, Matt Stafford's numbers this year. And these are his passing yards. And if you look, the most he's had all year was 389 yards in week five against the 49ers. He had 375 against the Colts. He had 368 this weekend against the Lions. His least amount of passing yards all year was against the Seahawks when he had 130 yards. The next closest was 181 against the Ravens. So, you know, these things do not mean that everything's copacetic and the Seahawks are just going to roll. None of that is my point. I do not believe that's the case. But I do feel like there's a little amnesia about that game in terms of how many things the Seahawks did better than anybody else in the NFL has done against the Rams this year. And they're not easy to do, as you can see. Like, most teams are struggling to put up credible performances against the Rams. The Seahawks didn't. There's really like one thing that did not go exactly their way. Even like the fact that they have the most yardage against the Rams defense. Like, that's, did I show that one? I can't remember if I showed that one or not. I don't think I did. Let me pull up that graph so you guys could see that as well. Maybe I didn't put it up yet. Okay, well, it is true that the Seahawks have gained the most yards against the Rams defense all year. So even though they had those four turnovers, they had 414 yards of offense. So I just kind of bring those up as reminders that this is not a pointless, you know, like this is not a hopeless situation, which I think there's some folks that feel a little bit that way. I don't. As of right now, oddsmakers have the Rams as 1.5 point favorites. It had been the Seahawks as 1.5 point favorites. I believe that if the Seahawks game against the Colts had gone differently than it had, that the line might be even closer or might be favoring Seattle, but it's pretty close. And this is a tough one for both teams going on short rest. There is one team that's, I think, a little bit better health, and that's the Seahawks. But as I'm going to spend a lot of the rest of my day breaking down this matchup in Tail the Tape, we will not have to wait till game day for Tail the Tape. I'll have that already. I already see that there's some differences in terms of how certain players are performing now versus how they performed then, both on the Seahawks and on the Rams. Emmanuel Forbes, I'll give you a little bit of a sneak peek. That guy was a hero against the Seahawks. And people were like, man, they've really figured out, the Rams have saved Emmanuel Forbes' career. He looks like a Pro Bowl corner. Well, Emmanuel Forbes, if you just look at, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at performance, but if you just take a PFF grade look, he had been doing pretty darn well for, I would say, from week 6 to week 12. He'd had grades all above 60 in coverage. And in fact, he had a 76.1, 76.7, and he had a 93 coverage grade against the Bucs the week after they played the Seahawks. So he had been really a credible cornerback for all that time. Well, last three games against Carolina, he had a 28 coverage grade. He gave up 5 receptions and 5 targets for 110 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, a perfect 158.3 passer rating. The next week against Arizona, a team that they blew out, he had a 48.4 coverage grade. He gave up 4 receptions and 5 targets for 50 yards, 1 touchdown, no interceptions, and a 147.9 passer rating. And then this past week against the Lions, again, he got a 39.5 coverage grade. He gave up 5 catches in 8 targets for 76 yards and a 93.8 passer rating. So he has not been, he has been the guy that got cut more than the guy that has been resurrected the last 3 weeks. And I think if you look at some of the other corners on that team, there's a little bit of weakness there. And I think with Rashid Shaheed integrated more into this game than he was back then, it was only his second game, the first time they played, I think there's something to be said there. So I see some differences. You didn't have Eric Saubert. You didn't have, well, I'll go through all the lineup stuff, but there, I mean, I think Ernest Jones' health is meaningfully different than it was for that game. And I think that was a big part of some challenges there. We'll see. We'll see. Obviously, the Charles Cross thing is one to watch. I continue to be optimistic. I think that a left tackle is going to be able to play with a hamstring injury, but we'll see. So time will tell. If you haven't taken advantage of the Simply Seattle deal, now is a great time to do it. Go to simplyseattle.com, use code HawkBlogger15. Not only do you get 15% off your purchase on the best Seattle sports gear you're going to get your new favorite hat, sweatshirt, whatever, but 5% of your purchase until December 24th will go to the Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient and Family Assistance Fund, which provides vital help with transportation and temporary lodging for patients fighting for their lives. And if you get a Simply Good hoodie for $25, another $5 will go to the Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient and Family Assistance Fund. So do good for you, do good for someone you love, and do good for people that are fighting cancer. It's a win-win-win-win. That's what we look for on this channel. So HawkBlogger15 is the code. gets you all of those good things to happen between now and December 24th. Go to Sleeper, download the Sleeper app if you haven't already. Not only will you get a chance to get your fantasy football news and your NFL and your NHL news and all of that stuff, but if you use promo code Hawks, you'll get up to a $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. All right, let me check on Super Chats. I know there was a few. And we've got Peter Gohawk says, can we start Velus Jones and see what happens? I'm not nearly as negative on the running backs as like Evan is, and I know others are. I think a lot of people were really negative on Ken Walker after this weekend. I'm just not. I think Ken Walker's been playing well. I understand that not everyone feels that way. I think that there's challenges across the board in the run game, that whether sometimes it's tight ends making a block, whether sometimes it's the running back taking the right track, whether it's the offensive line, like there's a lot of things that have to go right and they just haven't necessarily. So I like Velus Jones. I'm a fan. I'm glad he's here. I don't know if he's gonna be active for this game. He's already been elevated three times. They would have to clear a spot on the roster for him. I think it's more likely that they will raise Cam Akers from the practice squad to be on the roster this week than Velus Jones, but who knows? If they do clear a roster spot for Velus Jones, that will say something. So I agree with Matt. I thought Zach Charbonnet had a good game other than the pass protection pickup against Latu, but also that was a little bit of an odd call to have him responsible for the edge there. In any event, I'm not ready to hang it up on the running backs the way others are. And I still believe Ken Walker is a huge weapon for this team and Zach Charbonnet. So I'm still optimistic about those guys. Peter Gohawk says, for his career, Velus has 8+ yard rush average and 11+ receiving average. Is it going to hurt to see what he has? Small sample. What do you guys think? Yeah, that's not going to happen. Like there's 0.00% chance that's going to happen. If they really thought it was all the backs that was the problem, then I think you'd be seeing a very different approach. I think that this is the biggest game of the season. They're not going to start throwing a curveball of a guy that has never started for them, you know, getting meaningful snaps. So I appreciate the intent, but it's just not really realistic. Kelly Martinez says, Sam seems more hurried lately, adding to his issues with ball security and discomfort. Without push in the run game, optimism for Thursday is hard to find. Feels like we're left hoping Kubiak can scheme a solution. Yeah, I mean, again, I think that if Sam Darnold had made different decisions in terms of when there was a play that wasn't there and he had dirted the ball or thrown it out of bounds or whatever, I think the Seahawks win that game, and they might have won that game relatively comfortably, not like blowing them out, but they might have won by more than 7 points. They might have won by more than 5 points, whatever you want to pick. So I don't know that the Seahawks are in this desperate need of, they need to figure things out. I'm kind of curious. I'm going to run a quick query while we're waiting here. AX rushing success rate by week this season, including opponent. So I'm going to look. I actually think they even ran the ball, if I remember correctly. I think they ran the ball pretty well against the Rams in that game. I'm using my new little tool that I built. I'm very geeky and excited about that. I've created a little tool that I can use where I can have it query NFL Fast R, which is an open source data of all the NFL stats. And then I have it use AI. Yes, I'm using AI to generate a query, a SQL query to ask the question of the database and get back the data. And I also have it creating charts for me. So it's pretty sweet. I feel pretty excited about it. All right. So Seahawks success rates against the Rams. 37.1 is what I'm seeing here. I don't know if that's right. we'll take a look. But anyway, I feel like the Seahawks did reasonably well against that Rams defense. It just took a little while. In fact, let me pull open the box score since I'm here. I'm just going to look at that game drive by drive real quick. And I think that's always an interesting way to look at games and assess. So the Seahawks started that game with an interception, right? Like three plays in, it was like, oh God, what's happening? Then they went field goal, field goal, field goal, on drives that covered 26, 53, and 89 yards. All right. So I know they're not touchdowns, but like scoring drives, three straight, then another interception, then a field goal. So four of their first six drives were scoring. When they weren't scoring, it was because they were getting intercepted, which is not a good trade-off. So they scored on four of their first six drives. Then, interestingly, in the second half, you know, they had that interception and then another interception back-to-back, right? Then a punt. Then finally, they had an 84-yard drive for a touchdown. And then they had a 56-yard drive when they started at their own one, and they missed a field goal. So the Rams had three scoring drives. Their longest scoring drive was 74 yards. Their other two scoring drives were 25 yards and 3 yards. The Seahawks had scoring drives. Well, I mean, put it this way. The Seahawks had five scoring drives. They each one of their scoring drives was longer than all but one of the Rams. So, I mean, this is the Rams. They went out on downs the first drive. Remember, that was a goal line stand. Then they get a 3 yard touchdown on their second drive. Then they get 74 yards for a touchdown. This was the fourth down. They busted the run. Blake Corum goes for a long gain on fourth and short. So that's the one where they actually got the defense, one drive. And then after that, 1 yard, punt, 7 yards, fumble, 23 yards, punt, 20 yards, punt, 25 yards, touchdown, punt, 4 yards, punt, 7 yards, punt, 18 yards. I mean, guys, like the Rams had... Let's look at it. They had, I'll take away the touchdown that was 3 yards. But they had 4, 5, 6, 7 drives that were 23 yards or less. Now, I don't go into it assuming, oh man, they're just Seahawks are going to do that again. Easy. Not at all. But I guess I'm reflecting on this question of, does Kubiak have to come up with some fancy answer? I think Sean McVay has to come up with an answer, because guess what? We can go back to the last time the Seahawks played the Rams with something on the line, and that was 2024 against Mike McDonald. And if we look at that box score and we look at the drives in that game, I'm not going to go through all of them, but the Rams started out 7 yards punt, 12 yards punt, 5 yards punt, 39 yards punt. Then they got a field goal, then 19 yards, interception. That was their start to that game. The way that game ended in regulation, they had a blocked punt, a 2 yard drive, and then it had a punt blocked. They had a 7 yard drive, punt, 1 yard drive, punt, 19 yard drive, punt. So I think Sean McVay has got as much to figure out against Mike McDonald as Clint Kubiak does against Chris Shula. And yeah, I mean, I see this like, and who won the game? I feel like that's a really bullshit way to look at this. I really do. And The reason I think that's bullshit is because I do believe in process versus results. And if you do, like, if you play 100 games and you outgain your opponent and you have a better success rate and you are more efficient on offense and defense, you're going to win most of those games. You're going to win the vast majority of those games. The fact that there are situations where you don't does not negate the fact that if you outperform a team in most aspects of what is a leading indicator to winning a football game, guess what? You usually win. So I don't feel like that's the mic drop that people think it is who won the game. I think that you look at all the things that had to happen for those games to turn out the way they did, and you're like, you know what? Let's just keep hammering. Let's keep chopping away, doing what we do. And eventually, we're not going to be the ones that have like an absolute crazy number of big mistakes and or bad luck. Having AJ Barner get tripped when on the red zone possession last year that turned into one of Geno Smith's second red zone interception. It's not great luck. Having a punt go out at the 1-inch line on its own is bad luck. Like, that's not skilled. Like, there's no punter that can repeatedly do that. That's bad luck. I'm not saying the Seahawks just lost that game because of bad luck. I am saying that that was a factor. And I care a lot more about the factors that are controllable and repeatable and reliable than I do about fluky things. So no, I don't think that the fact that the Rams won is all that matters. And at the same time, I will be the first one on here. If the Rams completely outperform the Seahawks in this game and the Seahawks win on some fluky way, I'll be like, all that matters is we got the win. So I get it. I get it. I understand. But we're in a different part of the week right now. We're in the analysis part of the week and assessing who's got an advantage where. And advantages are not just who won. Advantages come down to player versus player, scheme versus scheme. And I think Mike McDonald so far has demonstrated some advantages against the Rams. And if Davante Adams doesn't play, I think that further, complicates things for Los Angeles. All right, that will do it for this edition of Hawk Blogger Mornings. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. We will have Real Hawk Talk. I think it will be tomorrow night. I'm still working that out with the fellas. Until next time, I am Brian Emhauser. Have a great rest of your day.